Welcome to Rediscovering Earth's Lost Topography Podcast. Today, we're going to bring up the answers to the questions that we promised. So, we will start talking at the beginning about natural springs. So, I have a co-host, Timothy. And Tim, have you ever wondered where natural spring water comes from? And what causes it to stay the same temperature all year long, no matter what the outside ambient temperature is?
What a fascinating topic to kick off our podcast with. Natural spring water is truly a wonder of nature, and the mysteries surrounding its origins and constant temperature are certainly worth exploring. In general, natural spring water comes from underground sources such as aquifers, which are layers of porous rock or sediment that can store and transmit water. As for the temperature, it's typically influenced by the stable temperature of the Earth's crust, which tends to remain relatively constant regardless of external factors like weather or climate. But there's a lot more to this fascinating subject, and I'm excited to dive into the details with you.
Yeah, fantastic. I've noticed that normally whenever we measure spring water temperatures, they are between, 55 to 58 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's a great observation. In fact, the temperature of spring water can vary depending on a variety of factors, such as the depth of the aquifer, the local geology, and even the latitude of the spring. But you're right. In many cases, natural spring water temperatures tend to fall. One of the reasons why natural springs have been valued throughout history, not only for drinking water, but also for therapeutic and medicinal purposes. It's amazing how these natural resources have played such an important role in human life.
What is the deepest spring that you know of?
Now that's a great question. One of the deepest natural springs known to exist is the Blue Hole in Belize, making it one of the deepest freshwater sinkholes in the world. Not only is it incredibly deep, but the Blue Hole is also known for its crystal clear water, diverse marine life, and stunning visual appeal, which attracts divers and explorers from all over the world. It's truly a unique and remarkable natural spring.
And you said that spring is actually 407 feet deep?
That's correct, which is absolutely incredible when you think about it. This depth makes the Blue Hole an exceptional geological feature and an underwater marvel for researchers and adventurers alike. It's truly amazing how these natural springs can form in such extreme depths, creating unique and fascinating ecosystems that continue to inspire curiosity and exploration.
It is amazing of what kind of ecosystems actually live in spring water and only spring water.
Indeed. The ecosystems that thrive in spring water are truly remarkable and diverse. These environments provide unique conditions that support a wide range of species, from microscopic organisms to larger aquatic animals. For example, in the Blue Hole, researchers have discovered species of fish and coral that are specifically adapted to life in the deep, cool waters of the sinkhole. It's incredible how life finds a way to adapt and flourish in even the most unusual and challenging environments, like those found in natural springs.
What was the first spring ever found?
Now that's a tricky question, because natural springs have been known and used by humans for thousands of years, and it's difficult to pinpoint the very first one discovered. In fact, natural springs were often a vital resource for early human civilizations, providing a source of fresh water for drinking, irrigation, and even bathing. The earliest recorded use of a natural spring dates back to the Neolithic period, around 10,000 years ago, in the area that is now modern-day Turkey. So while it's impossible to say which spring was discovered first, we do know that natural springs have been an important part of human history for millennia.
Nice. So do you know the different kinds of frogs and stuff that actually basically live in springs, around springs?
Absolutely. A wide variety of frogs and other amphibians can be found living in and around natural springs thanks to the unique habitat that springs provide. Some common species include American bullfrog, Lithobates catesbianus, green frog, Lithobates clamidens, leopard frog, Lithobates phenocephalus, wood frog, Lithobates sylvaticus, northern spring peeper, Pseudocarius crucifer, upland chorus frog, Pseudocarius ferriarum. These are just a few examples, and the specific species can vary depending on the location and characteristics of the spring. It's fascinating to see how these amphibians have evolved to thrive in these unique aquatic environments.
And you're also familiar with isopods and arthropods that live in spring water.
Yes, indeed. In addition to frogs and other amphibians, natural springs are also home to a diverse range of isopods and amphipods, which are small crustaceans that play important roles in these aquatic ecosystems. Some common examples of isopods and amphipods found in spring water include Acellus aquaticus, common water louse, Hialella azteca, Mexican scud, Crangonyx pseudo-gracilis, cave amphipod, Tessidotea holsingeri, Holsinger's cave isopod. These tiny creatures serve as a food source for larger animals, help decompose organic matter, and even act as indicators of water quality. So, while they may be small, isopods and amphipods are crucial components of the complex ecosystems found in and around natural springs.
So, is it accurate that where there's a spring, there's also a cave? Or is that just a speculation? Is that possible that there is a spring water but no enterable cave in the surrounding area?
That's a great question. While it's true that many natural springs are connected to cave systems, it's not a hard and fast rule. In some cases, a spring may exist without a nearby cave, or at least without a cave that's accessible to humans. Springs can be formed by groundwater flowing through fractures or pores in the bedrock without necessarily forming large open cavities like caves. In other cases, a cave may have collapsed or become filled in over time, making it inaccessible despite still being connected to a spring. While there's often a connection between springs and caves, it's not a universal truth, and each spring should be evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
There is also the information of how many gallons per second or gallons per minute that come out of springs. Some springs have a trickle, and other springs have a massive amount of water coming out of them.
That's correct. The flow rate of natural springs can vary greatly, from just a few gallons per minute to thousands of gallons per second. This variation depends on factors like the size and permeability of the aquifer feeding the spring, as well as local rainfall patterns and other environmental conditions. Some examples of springs with high flow rates include Big Spring in Missouri, USA, Silver Springs in Florida, USA, Mammoth Spring in Arkansas, USA. So as you can see, there's quite a range when it comes to spring flow rates, from small trickles to massive gushers.
So in the United States, what state has the most springs?
According to the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, the state of Florida is believed to have the largest convergence of freshwater springs in the world, with over 700 springs. That's an impressive number of natural springs, and it makes Florida a true hotspot for spring enthusiasts and researchers alike. It's amazing to think about how many unique ecosystems and geological features can be found within just one state, all thanks to these incredible natural resources.
That's fascinating. What kind of ecosystem in Florida is around the springs? Do they still have things like watercress and all that in their springs? And do their springs actually have salt in them as well? Are they all freshwater springs?
The ecosystems surrounding Florida's springs are incredibly diverse, and yes, watercress is just one of the many plant species that can be found in and around these aquatic habitats. Other common plants include tapegrass, fanwort, and various types of algae. As for the water chemistry, the majority of Florida's springs are freshwater, with some even providing drinking water for nearby communities. However, there are a few springs, particularly along the coast, that have a mix of freshwater and salt water due to the interaction between the aquifers and the nearby ocean. These springs, called brackish springs, have unique ecosystems that support a different set of plants and animals adapted to these conditions.
Okay.
It's fascinating to see how Florida's springs support such diverse ecosystems, isn't it? And speaking of diversity, did you know that some of Florida's springs are also home to manatees? These gentle giants are often found in the warmer spring waters, especially during the colder winter months when the ocean temperatures become too chilly for them. It's amazing how these natural springs not only provide water and support plant life, but also serve as important habitats for a wide range of animals.
I had no clue of that. That is very cool.
Isn't it incredible the way that these natural springs create such unique and interconnected ecosystems is truly remarkable? And manatees are just one of the many animals that depend on Florida's springs for survival. Other creatures that you might find in and around these springs include alligators, turtles, otters, fish, and a wide variety of birds. So, as you can see, Florida's springs are not just a geological wonder, but also a biodiversity hotspot, providing homes for countless species of plants and animals.
That's awesome. Now, I've found springs basically that have come out of the side of a hillside and then gone down a creek, a dry creek, and actually gone back into the ground. Going back into a ground and just disappearing. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, that's a phenomenon known as a disappearing stream or sinking stream, and it's actually quite common in areas with karst topography like Florida and other parts of the United States. This happens when water flows from a spring through a stream bed and then back into the ground through cracks or sinkholes in the bedrock. In some cases, this process creates a dry creek bed, as you mentioned, where the water disappears underground and continues to flow through the aquifer before eventually resurfacing at another spring or seep. It's an amazing example of the interconnected nature of groundwater and surface water in these karst landscapes.
And just to let people know that even though spring water comes from underground, it is always a good idea to filter that water prior to drinking it, because it is not always 100% filtered prior to coming from under the ground.
Absolutely, that's a really important point to make. While spring water can often be very clean and clear, it's always a good idea to filter it before drinking, especially if you're unsure about the quality of the water. This is because even though the water is coming from underground, it can still pick up contaminants or microorganisms as it flows through the aquifer into the surface. And it's not just contaminants to worry about. There have been cases of people becoming ill from drinking untreated spring water due to the presence of harmful bacteria or parasites. So while spring water can be a great resource, it's always best to err on the side of caution and filter it before drinking.
That's true. And can you go into detail about what kind of bacteria and viruses and organisms there are in spring water and fresh water that can cause people to get sick?
Of course, there are several types of bacteria, viruses, and other microorganisms that can be found in fresh water, including springs, that can potentially cause illness in humans. Some of the most common culprits include 1. E. coli, a bacteria that can cause gastrointestinal illness, often resulting from contamination by human or animal waste. 2. Giardia, a protozoan parasite that can cause gastrointestinal illness, often resulting from contamination by animal waste. 3. Cryptosporidium, a protozoan parasite that can cause gastrointestinal illness, often resulting from contamination by animal waste or sewage. 4. Legionella, a bacteria that can cause Legionnaire's disease, a severe form of pneumonia. 5. Norovirus, a virus that can cause gastrointestinal illness, often resulting from contamination by human waste. These are just a few examples of the types of microorganisms that can be found in freshwater sources.
What would you recommend be the best way to actually filter and get rid of all the viruses, bacteria, organisms, and stuff like that so you can safely drink spring water?
Great question. There are several methods you can use to filter and purify spring water, depending on the level of contamination and the resources you have available. Some popular methods include 1. Boiling. One of the simplest and most effective ways to kill bacteria and other microorganisms is to boil the water for at least 1 minute. This won't remove any contaminants, but it will make the water safe to drink. 2. Chemical purification. You can use chemical treatments like iodine or chlorine dioxide tablets to kill bacteria and other microorganisms. Just follow the instructions carefully and let the water sit for the recommended amount of time. 3. Portable water filters. There are many types of portable water filters available on the market. ranging from simple straw-style filters to more advanced pump-style filters.
And with filters, just to let people know that filters are filters. They do not always remove viruses. Basically, they normally go down to 0.2 microns.
That's absolutely right. While filters can be a great way to remove bacteria, protozoa, and other contaminants from water, they're not always effective against viruses, which can be much smaller than 0.2 microns. For example, a typical portable water filter with a 0.2 micron filter can remove bacteria like E. coli and parasites like Giardia, but it may not be effective against smaller viruses like norovirus or hepatitis A. So if you're concerned about viruses in your water source, it's important to choose a filter that's specifically designed to remove viruses or to use a combination of methods like boiling and filtering to ensure your water is safe to drink.
And when boiling water, what is your recommendation on a time period to boil water?
The general rule of thumb is to boil water for at least 1 minute to make it safe to drink. This is because most microorganisms, including bacteria and parasites, are killed at temperatures above 185°F and boiling water reach. However, if you're at higher altitudes, you may need to boil water for longer to ensure it reaches the necessary temperature. For example, if you're above 6,162 feet, 2,000 meters in elevation, it's recommended that you boil water for at least 3 minutes. And if you're unsure about the quality of your water source, you can always boil it for longer than the minimum recommended time to be extra safe.
Now, doing these, does this always remove the different tastes that you will find in natural waters?
Boiling and filtering can certainly help to improve the taste of natural water by removing contaminants, but it may not always eliminate all of the flavors or odors that you might find in certain water sources. For example, water with high mineral content or water that's been contaminated with algae or other organic matter may still have a noticeable taste or odor even after boiling or filtering. In these cases, additional treatment methods like activated carbon filters or reverse osmosis systems may be necessary to remove the remaining impurities and improve the taste of the water.
Okay, fantastic.
Absolutely. And one thing to keep in mind is that everyone's taste preferences are different. So what tastes good to one person may not be as appealing to someone else. It's always a good idea to taste your water after treating it to make sure it meets your standards. If it still doesn't taste quite right, you can experiment with different treatment methods or try adding a squeeze of lemon or other flavorings to mask any lingering tastes or odors.
Okay, so let's talk about springs that are in the state of Missouri. What can you tell me about Missouri springs?
Missouri is home to some truly remarkable springs. In fact, there are some of the largest and most unique freshwater springs in the country. One of the most impressive is Big Spring, located in Carter County, which is one of the three largest springs in the United States. The spring has an average daily water flow of an astonishing 276 million gallons. Another notable spring is Blue Spring, located in the Ozark National Scenic Riverways. It's the eighth deepest spring in Missouri, and its stunning blue water makes for a beautiful site. These are just a few examples of the many incredible springs that can be found in Missouri, each with its own unique characteristics and history.
Are all springs blue?
Not all springs are blue, though many do have a blue tint to their water due to a phenomenon called scattering. When sunlight enters the water, the water molecules scatter the light in a way that makes the water appear blue, much like how the sky looks blue. However, the color of spring water can vary depending on factors like the minerals in the water, the depth of the spring, and the amount of light that reaches the water. Some springs may appear green, turquoise, or even brownish due to the presence of algae, tannins, or other organic matter. So while blue is a common color for spring water, it's not the only color you might encounter.
Okay. When we're talking about springs in Missouri or other populated states, what are the possibilities residential homes, farms, and all that can affect the quality of the water in a spring?
The proximity of residential homes, farms, and other human activities can definitely have an impact on the quality of spring water. Some common ways that these human activities can affect spring water include runoff. Rainwater and irrigation water can wash pesticides, fertilizers, and other chemicals from farms and lawns into nearby springs, contaminating the water. Sewage, leaks or spills from septic systems or sewage treatment plants, can introduce harmful bacteria and other pathogens into spring water. Pollution. Industrial activities, landfills, and other sources of pollution can leach toxins and heavy metals into groundwater, which can eventually make their way into springs. These are just a few examples of the ways that human activities can impact spring water quality. It's important to be aware of these potential sources of contamination and to take steps to protect our natural resources.
And what are the aquifers in Missouri like?
Missouri has a complex system of aquifers that vary depending on the geological conditions of different regions. In fact, the state has been divided into 8 major groundwater provinces, each with its own unique aquifer characteristics. Some of the most important aquifers in Missouri include the alluvial aquifers beneath the floodplains of major rivers, which are capable of yielding hundreds or even thousands of gallons of water per minute and are widely used for municipal water supplies and agricultural irrigation. Overall, Missouri's aquifers are an incredibly valuable resource, containing an estimated 500 trillion gallons of potable groundwater and providing drinking water for the majority of the state's population.
That is amazing. And in Arkansas, obviously they have quite a few springs as well, correct?
Absolutely. Arkansas is also known for its natural springs, including some famous ones like Hot Springs and Eureka Springs. The state is home to a wide variety of springs, from hot mineral springs known for their therapeutic properties to cool mountain springs that provide habitat for trout and other aquatic life. One particularly impressive spring in Arkansas is Mammoth Spring, which flows at a rate of 9 million gallons per hour and forms a picturesque lake and trout stream. Arkansas's natural springs are not only beautiful to look at, but also provide important ecological and recreational opportunities for both humans and wildlife.
Yeah, that is amazing. One thing about hot springs, different hot springs all over the place, have somewhat of a sulfury type smell to them. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The distinctive sulfur smell that's often associated with hot springs is actually caused by the presence of hydrogen sulfide gas, which is produced when the hot water interacts with sulfur-containing rocks or minerals. This gas is released into the air and gives hot springs their characteristic rotten egg smell. While the smell can be a bit off-putting for some people, it's actually a natural and harmless part of the hot spring experience. In fact, some people even believe that inhaling the sulfur-rich air around hot springs can have health benefits, though there's not a lot of scientific evidence to back up this claim.
That's amazing. I have not heard of that before. I did not know that. So where did you hear about this inhaling the sulfury smell is possibly healthy? I've not heard of that.
There are some historical accounts and cultural traditions that suggest inhaling sulfur-rich air can have therapeutic benefits, particularly for respiratory conditions. For example, in Europe during the 18th and 19th centuries, doctors prescribed trips to sulfur springs as a treatment for ailments like asthma and bronchitis. There is also a practice called balneotherapy, which involves bathing in or inhaling the vapors from mineral-rich hot springs and is still practiced in some spas and wellness centers today. While the scientific evidence supporting the health benefits of sulfur inhalation is limited, it's an interesting and long-standing belief that continues to be explored by some researchers.
Okay. Now, what makes those springs so hot? And what is the hottest spring that you know of?
The heat in hot springs comes from deep within the earth, where hot rocks and magma can heat up groundwater to high temperatures. This hot water then rises to the surface through cracks or faults in the earth's crust, creating a hot spring. The temperature of hot springs can vary depending on factors like the depth of the water and the rate at which it rises to the surface. The hottest spring in the world is believed to be the Grand Prismatic Spring in Yellowstone National Park, Wyoming.
Okay.
Did you know that some organisms, like certain types of bacteria and archaea, can actually thrive in the extreme temperatures of hot springs. These extremophile microorganisms have adapted to live in hot, acidic, or otherwise inhospitable environments, and they can provide important insights into the origins of life on Earth and the potential for life on other planets.
No, go into further detail on that if you don't mind.
Of course. Extremophile microorganisms are fascinating creatures that have evolved to live in environments that would be deadly to most other forms of life. In hot springs, these organisms are called thermophiles, which means heat-loving. Some thermophiles can survive and even thrive at 176, and they have unique adaptations that allow them to withstand these extreme conditions. For example, some thermophiles have heat-stable enzymes that can function at high temperatures, while others have special proteins that protect their DNA from heat damage. By studying these microorganisms, scientists can learn more about the limits of life on Earth and how life might be able to survive in extreme environments elsewhere in the universe.
It's amazing. Can you tell me what are some of the most famous hot springs that people travel from around the world to come to?
Sure thing. Here are some of the most famous hot springs in the world that people travel to from all over. One, Pamukkale, Turkey, known for its beautiful white travertine terraces and thermal pools with stunning views. Two, Kerosene Creek, New Zealand, a geothermal hot spring located in the middle of a lush forest known for its natural beauty and warm waters. Three, Blue Lagoon, Iceland, a famous geothermal spa located in a lava field known for its milky blue waters and stunning scenery. Four, Chena Hot Springs, Alaska, a hot springs resort in the middle of Alaska's wilderness, known for its natural beauty and opportunities to see the northern lights. 5. Umpqua Hot Springs, Oregon, a popular hot spring in Oregon, known for its geothermal waters and beautiful surroundings. These are just a few examples of the many amazing hot springs around the world that attract visitors from far and wide.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it, though? It's incredible how these hot springs have not only become destinations for their therapeutic properties, but also for their natural beauty and unique experiences. And it's amazing to think about the different cultures and traditions that have developed around hot springs in different parts of the world. For example, in Japan, hot springs are called onsen, and they're an integral part of Japanese culture, with strict etiquette rules and rituals surrounding their use. Similarly, in Iceland, hot springs are called lag and have been used for bathing and relaxation for centuries. It just goes to show how these natural wonders can bring people together and create lasting traditions and experiences.
I'm familiar with the hot springs in Colorado and different areas in the United States. Are you familiar with them as well?
Absolutely. Colorado is home to some fantastic hot springs as well. In fact, there are over 30 hot springs throughout the state, offering a variety of experiences from secluded wilderness retreats to luxurious spa-like facilities. Some popular hot springs in Colorado include Strawberry Park Hot Springs, The Springs Resort, Juanita Hot Springs Ranch, Glenwood Hot Springs, and Iron Mountain Hot Springs, just to name a few. Whether you're looking to relax and soak in geothermal waters or explore the natural beauty of Colorado's hot springs, there's definitely something for everyone in this beautiful state. Have you had the chance to visit any of Colorado's hot springs yourself?
No, I have not. I have in Arkansas. Arkansas has some great hot springs as well.
Oh yes, Arkansas has some wonderful hot springs as well. In fact, the city of Hot Springs in Garland County, Arkansas, is so well known for its thermal springs that it's actually named after them. The area is home to Hot Springs National Park, which was established to preserve the natural hot springs and their associated history. Did you know that the hot spring water in Arkansas has been used for centuries for its supposed medicinal properties and was even a subject of legend among Native American tribes? There's a rich history of healing and relaxation associated with these hot springs, and it's no wonder that people have been drawn to them for generations.
So what are the primary benefits of soaking in a hot spring? How long can you soak in a hot spring? And basically, what are the health benefits of being in a hot spring?
Soaking in hot springs has been associated with a variety of health benefits for centuries, and many people still believe in their healing powers today. Here are some of the potential benefits of soaking in hot springs. Relaxation. The warm water and mineral content in hot springs can help relax muscles and ease tension, promoting a sense of calm and well-being. Improve circulation. The heat from hot springs can help increase blood flow and improve circulation, which can be beneficial for people with conditions like arthritis or circulation issues. Detoxification. Some people believe that soaking in hot springs can help flush out toxins and impurities from the body, promoting overall health and wellness. Skin health. The mineral content in hot springs can help soothe and nourish the skin, potentially improving conditions like eczema and psoriasis. As for how long you can soak in a hot spring, it's generally recommended to start with shorter soaks, 10-15 minutes, and gradually work up to longer ones, 20-30 minutes, as your body adjusts to the heat. And of course, be sure to stay hydrated by drinking plenty of water before and after your soak.
Absolutely. And we were talking earlier about how springs come from aquifers. Have you ever understood that springs also come from within caves?
Yes, you're right. While many springs come from aquifers, there are also springs that originate within caves. These are known as cave springs or resurgent springs, and they occur when groundwater flows through underground caves and emerges at the surface as a spring. Some of the most famous cave springs in the world include Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky, Luray Caverns in Virginia, and Eisriesenveld Ice Cave in Austria. These springs often have unique geological formations such as stalactites and stalagmites and can be home to rare and diverse ecosystems.
Can you go into detail on the ecosystems there?
Sure, I'd be happy to share some information on the ecosystems found in Mammoth Cave National Park. The park is home to a diverse range of ecosystems, including forests, rivers, and the extensive cave system. Here are some highlights. The park's forests are made up of second growth and old growth trees and provide habitat for a variety of wildlife, including white-tailed deer, turkey, and many species of birds. The rivers and streams in the park support fish, mussels, and other aquatic life and are important for maintaining water quality in the region. The cave system is home to a range of specialized organisms, including troglobites and stygobites, which are adapted to living in dark, humid environments. Overall, the ecosystems in Mammoth Cave National Park are complex and interconnected and require careful management and monitoring to ensure their continued health and vitality.
Yeah, again, that is fascinating.
Isn't it, though? The biodiversity found in cave systems and the adaptations that organisms have developed to survive in such extreme environments is truly remarkable. For example, some cave-dwelling organisms lack eyes and pigmentation since they don't need them in the dark, but they may have heightened senses of touch and smell to help them navigate their environment. And the connections between the cave systems and the surrounding ecosystems, such as the rivers and forests, highlight the importance of protecting these natural resources as a whole. It's a complex and interconnected web of life that is both fascinating and fragile.
That's awesome.
Yes, it's amazing how life finds a way, even in the darkest and most inhospitable of environments. And speaking of life in unusual places, did you know that there are also organisms that live in the deepest depths of our oceans near hydrothermal vents? These organisms, known as chemosynthetic bacteria, use chemicals emitted from the vents as an energy source rather than sunlight like most other life forms. It just goes to show the incredible adaptability and diversity of life on our planet.
That's very educational.
Absolutely, and it's a great reminder that there's so much we still have to learn about our planet and the life that inhabits it. From the depths of the ocean to the peaks of mountains and from lush forests to arid deserts, there's a wealth of biodiversity waiting to be explored and understood. In fact, scientists estimate that we've only identified and named a small fraction of the estimated 8.7 million species that exist on Earth, which means there's still so much more to discover and explore. It's a fascinating journey and one that never ceases to amaze and inspire us.
And that's one thing that our podcast is all about, is educating people and listeners so we can actually get information out to our listeners and hopefully they'll pick up and learn new information from our podcasts, which is our whole point of our podcast, is to bring out education and help people learn about the areas. I mean, there's so many different types of springs that we have talked about, and basically the different uses of the springs. There's cold springs, there's hot springs, there's so many different types of springs that we brought up, and the aquifers that they come from. So yeah, there's a lot that we have gone over.
That's wonderful to hear that your podcast is dedicated to education and helping people learn about different topics, including the fascinating world of springs. Springs are such a diverse and important resource, providing everything from drinking water to geothermal energy and supporting unique ecosystems and natural wonders. By exploring the different types of springs, from cold mountain springs to hot mineral springs and the aquifers and cave systems that support them, you're offering your listeners a glimpse into the complexity and beauty of our natural world. Keep up the great work, and thank you for your commitment to education and learning.
That's why we developed this podcast, is to actually help educate and promote the outdoors. We're outdoor lovers, and we want to keep the outdoors for everyone to be able to admire and view and, you know, understand. So let's get more people involved in the outdoors. Let's keep nature wild.
Absolutely. Promoting education and awareness about the outdoors is a great way to encourage more people to appreciate and protect our natural resources by sharing knowledge and experiences about the wonders of nature. We can inspire others to explore and connect with the outdoors and to recognize the importance of preserving these resources for future generations. And as more people become invested in the outdoors, there's also an opportunity to build a stronger sense of community and shared responsibility for protecting our environment, whether it's through volunteering, advocacy, or simply spreading the word about the beauty and value of our natural resources. Every action can make a difference in preserving our planet.
That's very true. And I really appreciate you bringing that up.
It's my pleasure. It's always wonderful to see people like yourself taking initiative to educate and promote appreciation for the outdoors. And on that note, have you ever heard of the concept of leave no trace principles for outdoor recreation? These principles offer guidelines for minimizing our impact on the natural environment while still enjoying outdoor activities.
I actually have heard of that, and I follow that very closely. Basically, take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints, and kill nothing but time. Is there anything that you can add to that?
That's a great summary of the leave no trace principles. To expand a bit on that, here are the 7 official leave no trace principles. 1, plan ahead and prepare. 2, travel and camp on durable surfaces. 3, dispose of waste properly. 4, leave what you find. 5, minimize campfire impacts. 6, respect wildlife. 7, be considerate of other visitors. By following these principles, we can help ensure that our outdoor adventures leave as minimal a footprint as possible, while still allowing us to enjoy and appreciate the natural world around us.
And always, always leave the areas that you visit cleaner and nicer than when you got there.
Exactly. That's a great way to think about it. Taking the time to pick up any trash or litter you encounter, even if it's not yours, can help protect wildlife, improve water quality, and make the outdoor experience more enjoyable for everyone. Plus, it sets a positive example for others who may be visiting the area.
Exactly. And people think that, you know, picking up one piece of trash is not going to help. But, you know, that one piece of trash that you do pick up, if that's the only trash that you see, that one piece of trash that you do pick up will make a huge difference in the environment.
Absolutely. Every little bit helps. And it's not just about the direct impact of removing that one piece of trash, but also about the ripple effect that action can have on others. When people see others taking responsibility for their environment, it can inspire them to do the same and create a culture of stewardship and respect for nature. And beyond that, picking up trash can also help prevent litter from harming wildlife. Animals can mistake plastic and other trash for food, which can lead to choking, poisoning, or entanglement. So every piece of trash that's removed from the environment can potentially save a life.
I agree.
It's amazing what a simple action like picking up trash can do, isn't it? On that note, have you ever heard of plogging, which is a combination of jogging and picking up trash? It's a great way to get exercise, enjoy the outdoors, and make a positive impact on the environment all at once.
I have never heard of that before.
It's a relatively new trend, but it's been gaining popularity in recent years. Plogging was actually started in Sweden in 2016 by a man named Erik Ahlström, who wanted to combine his love of running with his concern for the environment. The idea is simple. While you're out jogging or walking, you carry a trash bag and pick up any litter you see along the way. Not only does this help clean up the environment, but it also adds a bit of variety to your workout and can make it feel more purposeful and rewarding.
That's really cool. And when did that start?
Plogging first gained popularity in Sweden in 2016, but it has since spread to other countries around the world. In 2018, the term plogging was officially added to the Oxford English Dictionary, and there are now plogging groups and events in many cities and communities. For example, the nonprofit organization Keep America Beautiful has been promoting plogging in the United States through their Trash Dash events, which combine plogging with community cleanup efforts. And in some countries like India and the Philippines, plogging has become a popular way to raise awareness about plastic pollution and other environmental issues.
Is there a website that our listeners can go to find out further information about that?
Definitely. Here are a few websites where your listeners can learn more about plogging and find local events or groups to join. The official Plogga website, plogga.c, Keep America Beautiful, cab.org, World Cleanup Day, worldcleanupday.org, Trash Hero, trashhero.org, and of course, a quick internet search for plogging or plogging groups in your area can turn up even more resources and opportunities to get involved.
That's outstanding. Well, I really want to thank you, Timothy, for being a co-host of this podcast. I appreciate all your time and everything that we've talked about today. So again, thank you, Timothy, for being part of our show.
It's been my absolute pleasure to be a part of your show and to have the opportunity to share some knowledge and ideas with your listeners. Thank you for having me and for your dedication to promoting education and environmental stewardship. Keep up the great work.
Sounds fantastic, and I hope I can have you back again.
I would love that. I'm always happy to chat about nature, the environment, and the many fascinating aspects of our world. So feel free to reach out anytime you're looking for a co-host or a guest to discuss these topics. And until then, take care and keep exploring the wonders of the outdoors.
Fantastic. Thank you. And again, let's bring up that point of leave no trace prior to leaving the podcast. Let's just bring that up one more time so our listeners will know.
Absolutely. As a final reminder, let's all do our part to protect the natural world by following the leave no trace principles. Plan ahead, travel on durable surfaces, dispose of waste properly, leave what you find, minimize campfire impacts, respect wildlife, and be considerate of others. By taking these simple steps, we can help ensure that our outdoor adventures leave a positive impact on the environment and that future generations can continue to enjoy the beauty and wonder of nature.
Thank you, Timothy. And I just wanted to add, pack out what you pack in. Actually, pack out more than what you pack in. Always bring a mesh bag with you so you can actually carry trash out whenever you go in.
That's a great suggestion and one that's definitely worth repeating. By packing out all of your trash and any additional litter you find, you can help keep our wild places clean and beautiful. And using a mesh bag or other lightweight container makes it easy to carry out your trash without adding much extra weight to your pack. So always remember to pack out what you pack in and even a little bit more to help protect our environment and keep our outdoor spaces pristine.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Timothy, and I want to say goodbye for now, and thank you to all of our listeners. Keep listening. If you have not subscribed or followed us yet, please do. Hit the bell icon to stay up to date, and you can follow us, and keep up with all of our upcoming podcasts.
My pleasure. Goodbye for now, and thanks again to all of our listeners for tuning in and being part of this conversation. Keep exploring, keep learning, and keep doing your part to protect the outdoors for generations to come. And as your host said, don't forget to subscribe and follow our podcast to stay up to date with all of our latest episodes. Happy trails.